Hey there, friend. You are in for a great episode. I'm excited for you to apply what you learn. But after that, which episode will you listen to next? It can feel a bit overwhelming when there are so many episodes to choose from. That's why I created the podcast Roadmap for You. It's a free resource you can use that outlines the first 30 episodes I recommend listening to when you're either new to the podcast or coming back after a break and looking to get started, taking action toward creating permanent weight loss, as well as peace and freedom around food. To get it sent to you right away, just go to KatrinaEubelMD.com/start. Again, KatrinaEubelMD.com/start. Listen to the first episode and apply what you learned to yourself and your life. Then listen to the next episode. Apply that information and on you go. It won't take long and you'll see positive changes on top of building your momentum. So get the podcast roadmap now. KatrinaEubelMD.com/start. Enjoy this episode. You are listening to the Weight Loss for Busy Physicians podcast with Katrina Ubel, MD, episode number 208. Welcome to Weight Loss for Busy Physicians, the podcast where busy doctors like you get the practical solutions and support you need to permanently lose the weight so you can feel better and have the life you want. If you're looking to overcome your stress eating and exhaustion and move into freedom around food, you're in the right place. Well, hey there, my friend. Happy New Year. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm so glad you're here. Are we just so excited that it's 2021? Even though a lot of things may not have changed, it does feel super great to just have a fresh start, just a chance to start over again. It feels like kind of you've taken it like a great shower and trimmed your nails and cleaned your ears out. You know, you're just like ready to go. You're like done all the hygiene. You're just ready to start fresh. It's so good. So glad that you're here and starting off the new year with me as well. Okay, I have such a great treat for you. I know so many of you are loving all of these success stories. You love hearing stories of women just like you, physicians just like you, who are sorting out their weight issue. And so I thought it would be so fun to kick off the new year with another success story. This is Em Wong. She is so great. She is someone who all of us on the team, we just adore her. She's just such a lovely, lovely person. She actually lives in Hong Kong and is doing amazing medical work and some coaching out there as well. And so she's just fabulous. We love her so much. And she has a great story and I wanted you to hear it as well. She has a story where, you know, so many of us, right? When we were children, we were kind of maybe teased or even just like very lovingly given nicknames about how we were bigger or maybe a little fluffy or a little chubby or things like that. And we completely internalize these beliefs about ourselves and it affects us well into adulthood. So that's just part of her story. I can't wait for you to hear more about it. And she'll just tell you everything. She'll tell you all the details about herself. But I do also want to encourage you to check out the website blog post for this episode because she is also this great artist and has just on her own created these really fun little sketches that basically describe the work that she's doing. She'll tell you more about it when you listen, but we wanted to make sure that we got one of her sketches up for you to be able to see. So make sure you go to KatrinaEubelMD.com/podcast, and then you can see one of her sketches. So fun. She is so great. I can't wait for you to hear all about her story and just maybe get some inspiration for yourself. You know, it's so great when we start going like, wait, okay, yeah, sure, Katrina could do it. But like, what about this person? Now she's done it and this person's done it and this person's done it and this person's done it. You start to realize, you know what? Maybe I'm not so special anyway. You are special, but not special in the way that you can't lose weight or that's impossible for you. And so I can't wait for you to hear all about Em Wong and her story. So please listen, enjoy, and I'll talk to you next week. Em Wong, thank you so much for being here on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I'm super, super excited because you're coming to us from Hong Kong. So as we're talking, it's already tomorrow for you, which is probably not a big novelty for you, but it is for me right now. As I was telling you, I told my kids, like, I'm going to be talking to someone in a couple minutes who's already in tomorrow. They're like, what?
In the future.
It's the future. It's so fun. Okay. Well, I like to start all of these success stories with you just giving us a brief introduction of kind of who you are and all of that stuff. So how about you go ahead and do that?
Okay. So I basically spent some years growing up here in Hong Kong and then came to the US and did my degree at the University of Washington. So I went to med school there and then did my training at UCLA. And I'm a general internist. I worked in academic medicine and was the head of business operations for the Department of Medicine at the University of Washington for about 15 years. And then decided to come back to Hong Kong when I had an empty nest. And so I've been practicing here for about 8 or 9 years. And I specialize in integrative medicine. And more recently, I've been doing some health and wellness coaching. So
yeah, super fun. Awesome. Yeah. And is the plan to stay there, like, indefinitely at this point?
Probably not indefinitely. So, like, when my kids have kids, which might be soon, I will probably come back for more extended periods. But for now, I have aging grandmother and dad and people like that to take care of here in Hong Kong. So yeah, for now I'm here.
Cool. Yeah. Super fun. All right. Awesome. Okay. So now I would love it if you could just, like, tell us your weight struggle. Like, when did weight become an issue for you? Let's talk about that.
Okay. So it's funny when I look back at this, because I can't remember a time when I was not, didn't think of myself as being heavy and overweight. And actually, even growing up, it was kind of a joke in the family, kind of a sad joke for me. But my nickname growing up was Little Elephant in Chinese. And my parents thought it was super cute when I was born. And they always tell the story of how, like, when I was born, the movie Dumbo, the elephant, came out. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, he's super cute. And so they were like, oh, so we named you after the little elephant. And then there would always be these jokes, of course, when I was growing up about how clumsy and how fat I was and, you know, like, mm-hmm. all of these things, which really, like, in retrospect, made me, like, really, you know, ashamed of, like, my name and who I was, and I wanted to hide. And I just remember, like, you know, because I'm a taller, kind of, like, bigger boned person anyway. And so I just remember, like, growing up, my dad would always say these things like, well, we love you, you'll never be in a beauty contest, but I love you anyway. Mm. And I know, I know, look at your face. And then just, you know, and then my mom, you know, would just be like, you know, don't worry about your hair. Don't even try. Like, the message was, you know, like, you're just never going to, you know, be anything. So don't even try. So I think I just kind of grew up with that kind of image of myself. And looking back,
they were just, like, managing your expectations or something. Like, yeah, do you think that was about, or is that a cultural thing?
I think it came from a place of kindness of, like, you know, it's okay. It's like, you know, a consolation kind of thing. Like, don't, you know, don't worry. Don't try to be, like, perfect, you know? And it was so funny, because I do remember that when I was in college, so I'd always thought of myself as being chubby and overweight. And when I look back on my pictures, it's not like I was horribly overweight, but I just had this image in my head that I was way more, you know, like, out of control with my weight than I actually was. And I just remember in college, at one point, my parents sent me this article, Karen Carpenter, I don't know if you know her, but she, you know, she died of anorexia. Yeah. And they sent me this article and they're like, oh, we're always talking about your weight. Like, we don't want you to be worried about your body image. So don't ever get anorexia. Okay. Like, as if people with eating disorders, like, and just choose, like, whether they want to have one or not. Right. And
it's actually kind of sweet, the intention, right? They're like, exactly. We give you a hard time about it, but, like, don't take it to the extreme.
Exactly.
We really do love you. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I just always kind of just hated the way I looked, my body, my, you know, I had super round, you know, cheeks when I was younger. And that, of course, I have the almond shaped eyes. And so I just was always like, ugh, you know, didn't want to look in the mirror or anything. Mm-hmm. I never stuck with a diet for longer than a couple of weeks. And, you know, I think the lowest weight that I was as an adult was, like, right at my wedding, you know, as usual.
Right.
Like I had just done like a ton of step aerobics classes and things like that. And I got down to this weight, which I remember was like 155. And it just seemed like, wow, this is a miracle, right? But I knew it was just going to be like this moment in time.
Yeah.
And then after that, I started internship and then I put on a bunch of weight after that. And then I had a baby and another baby. And so I do remember like between the two babies, like I was just like, this is not okay. And so I like joined this gym. There was this female bodybuilder, like the kind with the big like muscles all over. And
Yeah.
And she like worked with me on, you know, like weightlifting and things like that. And so I do feel like my second pregnancy, I gained less weight. And I do remember being like 8 months pregnant and like on this Stairmaster and like other people were looking at me and like, oh my God, you're awesome. And I'm like, I'm awesome. But despite doing that, and I have to say that I even like, you know, I did triathlons, you know, I ran half marathons and I just never really got below like maybe the 170s, even like training, right? Bricks, you know, like 2 hours, 3 hours a day. Like I was just always at this, you know, like it's like I can't drop below this certain weight. And I feel like I was eating pretty healthy at the time, but like looking back, it's like, but actually, you know, like Halloween candy, you know, Easter candy was always a thing. I would always like eat dessert. In fact, I remember like being in the department chair's office when I was working in the chair's office, and I had like one of those M&M dispensers on my like meeting table. So people would come in and grab a handful of M&Ms, and I was like the M&M dispenser.
Like, and it's just for everybody else, but also for me.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Like I will eat half of the M&Ms and you can have some too.
Exactly.
And it just makes me laugh to like think about at the time, like how I was like, well, I'm eating really healthy. And I'm like, really? Like, you know, where did I get that idea? Right.
Just how powerful our brains are, right? Like we're like eating. I mean, even when it was like low fat time.
Yeah.
Right. You know, snack well time and everything.
For sure.
We all kind of knew chocolate. Like there's never been a time where we all kind of thought that like chocolate was like totally something that it was not a problem potentially. Right. But it's just our brains are so powerful in, you know, denying the facts, which is like, when you eat the half the container of M&Ms, it might be hard.
Yeah.
Calm down.
Yeah. So anyway, I think I just somehow had this narrative in my head that like, if I just work out enough, like, you know, my weight would go down. And I just remember being really disappointed and being like, okay, well, this is never going to work. And I'm just always going to be overweight. And, you know, my mom is overweight. My brother is overweight. You know, they both have diabetes. Like, this is just a thing. This is just how I'm going to be the rest of my life. And so I actually found your podcast about a year and a half ago, like in May of 2019. And it was just mind blowing, like the stuff that you were talking about, like with the model. And
how did you find the podcast? I'm totally just curious, like how you found the podcast?
It's interesting because I think I was just listening to like podcasts for physicians who had side gigs. And I'm trying to remember the name of the podcast that I was listening to. But anyway, there were a number of them and you were interviewed on one of them. And you were saying, you know, your podcast was about weight loss. And I'm like, oh my God.
Wait, what?
Oh my God. And I think it's really fun because, you know, I had already gone to like sort of a very low carb, you know, sort of approach at that point. I was already doing some intermittent fasting. And so I actually had kind of like realized that nutrition is actually the name of the game and not exercise at that point.
Yeah.
But I mean, I totally remember being like at least 6 months into your podcast before I joined Waldo. And I remember like thinking, like, as soon as I joined Waldo, I'm just like, oh, you're supposed to weigh yourself every day. Oh, like, I missed a key part of this program.
And by Waldo, that's our affectionate nickname for Weight Loss for Doctors Only, that program. We all call it Waldo, and everyone's always going to be like, what's Waldo? That's what that is. Yeah.
So
you listen to the podcast, and then what, did you start implementing anything? Did you apply what you learned?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So I was doing the self-coaching, the thought downloads. I did the no sugar, no flour. I would do the, you know, the planning ahead protocol and the journaling. So I did all of that. not, you know, perfectly, but that definitely helped. And I probably lost about 8 pounds before I even joined the program. Mm,
nice.
Yeah.
So then what made you kind of take that leap of like, I'm getting success on my own, I'm making progress, but I need some additional help. What was that kind of transition like for you?
There were a couple things. So I was already enrolled in a health and wellness coaching program through the University of Arizona. And I was, you know, realizing that in order to be a good health and wellness coach, like weight loss is one of the main reasons why people would want to seek out a coach. And I just didn't feel like the approach was going to be like targeted enough. And so, and I actually did really want to coach other doctors. Like I actually felt like that was something that, you know, really spoke to me. I really love this tribe of women physicians that we're in. And I was like, okay, I just need to like figure out like what it is that's in this program that would be different than the podcast. Right.
Right.
And like how this could be, because I feel like we don't really have a we don't have very long attention span, right? As doctors, we're basically like, you know, give me the thing and I'm just going to do it.
Don't waste my time. Don't mess around.
Right, exactly. No messing around. And so I just felt like I wanted to supplement that health and wellness coaching with, you know, some of the tools that I felt like I was going to learn from your program. So
got it. Okay. Awesome. So you joined the program. Well, actually, before we get to that, you were telling me before, like that you've worked with coaches.
Yes.
For a long, what did you say? 1998 was when you first started? Because by the way, I feel like you look younger than me.
Oh,
like
you
are like, seriously, I don't know what is the fountain of youth that you're drinking from. But like, I always like when I found out how old your son was, I was like, wait, how is that possible? Like literally my brain was like hurting. So
baby.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So you started like, yeah. Well, I mean, that's 22 years ago, right?
So when I started in my academic career path, I actually had, you know, two tiny children, you know, under the age of three. And, you know, I was applying for this huge, you know, National Centers of Excellence in Women's Health grant. And I was like, there's no way I can put more on my plate. I'm never going to get promoted, whatever. So I actually found this professional organizer who was the wife of one of the other faculty. And so she came in and like helped me out with my files and stuff. And she was like, oh, and by the way, I'm a professional coach. Do you want to work with me? And I was like, no idea what that was. And I was just like, okay, help me, you know. So she worked with me. Her name is Kathy Powell. She's amazing. I worked with her for like probably 20 years. So between 1998 all the way up to like coming back to Hong Kong, pretty much.
Yeah.
In fact, she's the one who helped me see that, like, you know, despite all my successes, you know, in academic medicine, that I had really been hiding and avoiding coming back to Hong Kong because I have this family business here. You know, I have all these issues with like being here in Hong Kong and, you know, and I realized it was time to face up to those fears, you know, with my kids leaving the nest and my grandmother was turning 91, I think at the time, or 92 actually. And so I was like, I only have a few years to spend with her. You know, she raised me and she's losing her memory. So she has dementia. Anyway, so now she's 101. So.
Isn't that incredible? Oh my gosh, that is incredible. That is incredible. Yeah, so you really had a lot of success with coaching before. Do you think that helped you with kind of taking the leap into signing up for weight loss for doctors only? Like kind of like knowing what coaching is? I feel like a lot of people are just like, I don't even know what is it that we do? What is coaching?
Yeah.
You had a better idea. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it helps, but honestly, like I feel like it was such a different approach because the coaching that I had before was more, you know, what we would call maybe action line coaching. So you really focus much more on what are you going to do and like, what are your goals? Right. And I think that it didn't really go so deep into like, you know, your thoughts and your feelings. And in many ways it seems like the model is deeper, but simpler, you know,
it's
faster. Right. Because you can change things really quickly and it's all up to you. Right. And I learned all the, you know, sort of stuff about like being responsible for your choices and being emotionally responsible and all of that stuff. But it didn't feel like it was sort of crystallized in a way that was so easy to apply.
Yeah. So like what do you actually do with it? Yeah. You know, what's interesting is I don't want to, you know, speak negatively about anybody's work, but I have spent some time going to various conferences of someone who is very, very well known as a kind of like self-help leader, guru kind of person. And what I found is that this person's work, like sometimes I'll be like, ooh, there's the model in there. Like the model's in there, but it's like, it's so confusing what's being taught. And like, you know, you're like, that was awesome. And then I'm like, now what am I going to do next? Like, I don't even know what to do, you know? And I sometimes think like, and I'm a coach. I can't imagine somebody who doesn't have any background in this, you know? And it's not, I mean, there are people who say this person has completely changed their life, like for the better. So I'm not even taking away from that, but I agree with you is the point that it just, it's just like, there's something that's so powerful in simplicity. It doesn't necessarily make it easy to change, but it's just like, there's like, your brain will want to be confused and overwhelmed to protect itself. And the simpler the work, the easier it is to get yourself out of that confusion.
And I think the other thing that's really powerful about the way that you teach this is that, you know, it's the self-awareness piece, right? So it's about kind of like, you know, just knowing that those thoughts are there, being okay with those thoughts being there. And that's the sort of core of, if I think about my health and wellness coaching, you know, that's that Jon Kabat-Zinn, you know, like just noticing those thoughts, you know, being aware of them, not judging them, and just allowing them to be there. Right. Like that piece I think is also, was also missing from my prior coaching.
Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah. And I love how it like all builds. Because, you know, over the course of time for me, I don't have quite as many years of like, I didn't discover this work, you know, as long ago as 1998, although it would have been fun had I. I wonder how things would be different. But you know, just like thinking back to it's like this very circuitous path that when you look back, you're like, oh, yeah. And then see, then this happened. And then I learned that. And then this built on that. And like, you see how it's all happening. You know, and all building up to create exactly what you want, which is so cool. So you came into the program then, and what was your experience? Did you just dive in head first? Were you like, give it all to me? Or were you a little reluctant at first?
No, I remember like, you know, you sign up and then there's like this period of time that you're waiting. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to do it all. And first month modules, I had them done like within 3 days. I'm like, okay, I'm done. So I was super into it. And actually, I think the funny thing is that I didn't actually lose any weight in the first 6 months. So I think it was because I was doing a lot of mind work. And I had already lost some weight just listening to the podcast, right? And so during that time, I think that when I look back on it, like it's one of those situations that you have talked about before on your podcast, which is where, you know, when your body is ready, then it's ready. And before that, it's not. And I think I had always still had the sort of old mathematical model of calories in, calories out, right? And what I realized, I think, through this work is that my body at least is very hormonal. And when I say that, I don't mean like menopause hormones. I mean like very like dependent on cortisol and insulin, right? So I think that those are two really powerful hormones for me in my body. Like when I'm stressed, like I literally will put on weight without changing anything in my protocol, right? And when I don't sleep, like I can, you know, like I will feel my body feels different, right? It feels like, okay, you know, I got to like hold on to my weight. Like maybe that's just my mind, like, you know, creating that.
It's
drama.
Like a protection, right?
Yeah.
It's like this, something is threatening or scary.
Yeah.
So let's hang on to it for protection. I love that you've made that connection, that you're not like telling yourself a story about how like poor you, the weight doesn't come off very well, because it's very easy. That's like what most people do. And instead you just got really, really curious and noticed the associations. So then, right, like if the weight goes up, you're like, how has my sleep been the last couple of days? Like, how stressed am I? What's really going on for me? That's super powerful. I
for
love
sure.
that. So what was that like? So the first 6 months, so that basically the whole weight loss reduction is the only program, you didn't lose weight. Were you like, deep down bummed about that? Like, you signed up for Masters, so like you definitely were, you know, connected enough to keep going. But yeah. Was it hard to stay connected to that, or were you like, I totally get it. I need to do this work.
I guess I was just I was definitely, I don't want to say disappointed, but I definitely was like, I'm waiting for this to happen. But I think there was
you weren't like overjoyed, probably.
There was a part of me that didn't actually think it was ever going to happen. Like, I was literally kind of like in my head, like, I need to do this work regardless of what happens to my weight.
Yeah.
Right. Because I could see like all the things, because I had like all these scarcity thoughts. I had all these, you know, I had a huge problem with money, you know, like I just relationship. Right. So I felt like there were all these things that I was working on, and that was all such good work that it was kind of like, I'm just going to keep going with this because I feel like this is just such a powerful turning point for me in terms of my personal growth. And it was almost like the weight was definitely secondary. And so it was kind of a shock when the weight started coming off again, you know, like in the second half. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, interesting. Yeah. Right. Because it does prove the point that it's really not what you're putting in your mouth or what you're doing with your body so much as what's going on in your mind.
Yeah. It's so much more like energetic and like all the things that we as doctors don't want to think about because this is not how we're trained. And this seems like more woo-woo out there, whatever. But like, I'm always just like, listen, if the traditional thing works for you, great. Love it. Like, you know, like have a great life. But when it's not working for you, instead of beating yourself up, thinking that something's wrong with you, it's like maybe there's a piece that's missing. Maybe there's a part that you haven't really dug into. Oh, that's so
powerful. Our bodies are so much more complex than, you know, like in medicine, we just like to slice and dice everything. And like with Occam's razor, just be like, okay, this is it, you know?
And like, I'm like, the doctor and I know.
Exactly. And it's like, well, no, it's not quite that simple.
It's not quite that simple. Exactly. Totally curious. Are you into traditional Chinese medicine at all, or anyone in your family? Has that factored into your life at all?
Yeah. So I actually trained in acupuncture, and I actually had like an East-West medicine clinic at the University of Washington, like for about 4 years. So coming back to Hong Kong, I haven't been practicing here because of course there's so many like people who have been trained so much better than my CME course. Right. But I definitely refer to a lot of TCM providers, and there's, you know, just really great resources available. So that's definitely part of like my integrative medicine kind of approach for people who are open to that. So,
Now, did you apply any of that knowledge to yourself with weight loss?
I did. And in fact, it's interesting because when I was doing that training, I did it in San Francisco. And I remember at the time I was training for like my third half marathon or something like that. And I remember at the time, like being like, okay, you know, like now I have this like traditional Chinese medicine stuff and like, I can really do this, really lose weight, you know? And I just remember like, there's this concept in Chinese medicine, which has to do with qi, which is like your, you know, your body's kind of like life force. And I think what I realized was that I was depleting my life force by training as hard as I was in order to pursue this, you know, goal of losing weight. But then like, you would think that by the third marathon, all these triathlons like, would have occurred to me that maybe that's not the way. Maybe it's not going to happen that way.
Totally.
But it took this different approach, completely different perspective from Chinese medicine to be like, oh, okay. You know, actually you're working against your body's, you know, kind of wanting to heal you, you know, working against because you're depleting your energy. You know, it was definitely that kind of burning the candle at both ends thing. And I can see looking back that my cortisol level is probably super high. You know, I was definitely in that mindset of like, oh, I'm just going to burn it all off so I can eat whatever I want, you know, and that obviously didn't work.
Right. I just think it's so fascinating, especially when you have, you know, that background or, you know, more about it, like applying that. But I kind of wonder if it's similar to like anything where it's, you know, it's like so easy to see so clearly for other people what they should be doing or like what's happening. But like then trying to have that personal insight on your own, sometimes we really just don't see it. You know? Which is one reason why group coaching is so powerful, right? Because someone else is being coached, then you're just like, oh my gosh, I see it plain as day. Yes. Yes. And then, you know, when it comes to you, of course, that person though is like struggling and trying to see it and trying to understand it. And then, you know, once you understand that intellectually, you can start going, oh, wait a minute, this is that same thing that I do that I struggle with too. Yes. And it's like an easier entrance point
for sure.
Into that.
For sure. Yeah. And coming back to the Chinese medicine, like I do feel like I learned about Qigong, which is a kind of meditation. And I feel like that was how I started sort of repleting my Qi. And I think that really served me was, you know, kind of like learning those principles. And really Chinese medicine is a whole lifestyle. I mean, we tend to think of like acupuncture as something we can take out and just sort of like, you know, have it be a sort of a freestanding, you know,
way of treating.
But it's really... Yeah, it really is a whole kind of like lifestyle. So
yeah, I did acupuncture before all of my in vitro cycles, and I did it literally in the little pre-op area right before embryo transfer and right after embryo transfer.
Awesome. And,
I had ended up switching providers when I started to do IVF, and they were so pro. Other alternative stuff. But I remember the main person, they had a specific person I had to see who had privileges at the hospital who could come. And he was the one who did that. But I had a different person that I worked with just kind of like otherwise. And she totally would talk to me about like, you need to be eating these kinds of foods. And like, you need to be really like nurturing your body in this way. And like all these different things. So I paid attention somewhat because I like really wanted to get pregnant. So I was like, sure, whatever. I'll eat the sesame seeds or whatever. But, you know, but it was very much like a means to an end versus a lifestyle, you know, type of approach.
Yeah. No, when they've done studies on, you know, like even cardiac, you know, like surgery patients, clearly has shown that the outcomes are improved. And maybe all it is just like, you know, calming down your cortisol levels and like, you know, mellowing things out, you know, a little bit more dopamine, a little more serotonin, but whatever is going on with neurotransmitters or chemicals, it's like definitely, it's definitely evidence-based.
I just think I'm like, listen, I don't have to understand exactly how it works. Like better is better research, you know, if it's showing it helps, like, you know, I don't have to totally understand everything, but I also kind of say, I'm like, well, it's been around traditional Chinese medicine for so long. Like if it didn't work, I think it would have died off by now. It's like, it's not a fad, you know? Sure. Yeah. That's super, super cool. So in terms of, you know, I always think it's interesting to think about just like cultural, you know, norms basically. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, coming to America, you said you were 6 when you came to America?
No, I was 16. So
oh, you're 16. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I got that wrong. Okay. So, you know, growing up, you know, many of us were like raised to eat all of our food. And like, you know, is that, cause sometimes I'm like, oh, this is, you know, people are like, oh, this is just a cultural thing. But I'm like, I think all the cultures do it. Maybe it's a common thing. Maybe it's a scarcity thing. Like, were there certain things that you had to really work through that were specific to cultural background?
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, when I think back at the first 6 months, when I said I didn't lose any weight, it was very much because I think that there was a lot of sort of like eating in group meals, you know, like, so it's family style, you know, every, you know, Asian meal is usually family style. So it's hard to even like control, like, you know, your portions, or you don't know what's going to be served. But more importantly, there definitely is a lot of like scrutiny, you know, like who's eating what, you know, have you had this? Why haven't you had that? Why don't you have more of that? You know? And so there's a lot of like food pushing. as well as sort of like people pleasing, you know, on the other end of the food pusher, you know, I'm usually the people pleaser, and it's kind of like, oh, well, her feelings will be hurt if I don't eat this. And so I definitely had to work through a lot of that, as well as the food waste, kind of, thoughts. Yeah.
And in a culture where, you know, your elders are so deeply respected.
It's
like, you know, we can talk about how like, well, grandma's just going to have to manage her own thoughts or whatever, but it's different than other people's relationships.
It is different. I think what's really, really helped me with that, like ironically, is, you know, like when I think about like family pressures, like what's really helped me is that I think about how my daughter is. So my daughter's 25 and she, you know, she's a vegan now. She was vegetarian before, but she has been for years, right? In fact, she's more or less converted me because I'm making recipes for her. And I'm like, these are really great recipes. And, you know, I love these. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about how she is, I think she's kind of a role model for me in terms of like, you know, kind of just very gently, you know, sort of being like, no, this is just the way, you know, I eat. And, you know, I just not pushy about it. You know, other people like make all kinds of, you know, I think pretty rude comments about it. You know, it's kind of like, oh, you're vegetarian. So does that mean you don't eat fish? You know, it's like,
right.
And they kind of, you know, and in the Chinese culture, it's almost like, you know, I'm like, oh, well, my daughter's vegetarian. They're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, there's not an opinion.
What's horribly wrong with her, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, but if you see her, right, just like owning it, not making it like a big deal, just being so confident in herself and make that decision. And like, so why can't you do that with food that serves you? Yeah.
She likes her reasons. She's not going to be talked out of it. And she's not going to take offense at people who ask questions who, you know, just don't know. So,
Exactly. So if you could sum up maybe like your top, you know, two or three lessons, like from being coach and doing this work, like what are some big takeaways that you've gotten out of this?
I would say definitely coming back to the awareness issue, I would say that that's probably the biggest thing. So I'll just give you one example of that, which is that, and I just laugh again, thinking back about this, but it used to be that I would always, if I was eating by myself, I would sit down to a meal and either watch TV or read a book or be doing something else while eating that meal. Right. Yeah. And what would happen is that I would sort of lose focus on like what I was eating. And I would just like, oh, I want a little bit more. The show's not over yet. So let me get some more food. And so then I get a little bit more food and then I'm watching the next show. That just keeps like going.
Cereal and milk, the bowl of cereal and milk. It's like too much milk, need more cereal, not more milk, add more milk, go back and forth.
Exactly. So, I mean, that was a pattern that I had been, you know, as long as I can remember all the way back to like college, med school, high school, you know, that was the thing. Like eating was great and entertaining myself distracting myself with some kind of entertainment made it even better. And so it was always this thing. And I remember like being in your program and talking to one of the coaches, you know, the one-on-one coaches and being like, But no, I can't not, you know, this is like my favorite thing is to sit down with a book or whatever. And just realizing that that didn't serve me. Right. Yeah. And being aware while I ate was so important. Like, so I could feel that hunger scale, you know, like give myself that time. And so now, like, I never have anything else that I'm doing at the same time as eating. I put on some music. I have a whole ritual. I, you know, set a glass of water for myself and I'm just like, no, this is my time because really how long does it take to eat a meal? Like,
Not that long, right.
You know,
even when you're not wolfing it down. Yeah,
exactly. Right. And so I just, you know, I think that mindfulness, the second thing is probably around scarcity. And so I do realize that, and this doesn't have so much to do with food, but more with like, I feel like I stress myself out by thinking about time as being a scarce resource or money scarcity, right? And so it shows up in all different ways in my life. But whenever I feel that sense of like anxiety or stress, or I'm putting some kind of pressure on myself, like when I have that awareness, then I just sort of have to take a deep breath and step back when I'm on my game. This doesn't always happen.
Hey, listen, I'm like B minus work. If you can do this 80% of the time, you're doing awesome.
Right. So it's that recovering perfectionist thing, right? It's like, you know, okay, so what is the, you know, what is the whole point here? Like even just coming on this podcast with you, you know, like I just was coaching with myself, you know, with the coach, and I was just like, I'm gonna, you know, mess it up, or, you know, I just feel so, you know, because Katrina's a goddess and, you know, like I can't talk to her. And
I should be like, yes, I am, in fact.
We're all goddesses.
As are you.
And she was just like, you know what? what is the reason that you really want to do this podcast? You know, what is the purpose of this? And I was like, yeah, you're right. It's not about me. It's not about Katrina. It's about the people out there that we're really wanting to help. Right? It's about showing up and being in integrity with myself. It's showing up and being myself, right? Just being my authentic who I am and helping other people to see that, you know, this is why this works, is because we can be honest with each other. And I feel like a lot of times as doctors, like, it's actually really hard to be vulnerable.
Totally.
Right? It's really hard for us to, you know, sort of, even like for me, for years, it was kind of like, I'm a doctor, I should know all the things. Why can't I lose weight? You know, like I know the physiology, like, right. And it was, you know, you've talked about this on your podcast. It's embarrassing. It's, you know, you feel like you somehow have failed as, you know, a doctor, if you aren't perfect.
And everyone can see that you're failing because they can see it on your body.
And that's just not how life is, and that's not how we support each other. And only by being honest and only by being, you know, our authentic selves can we truly love ourselves, right? Only. And so that's the third thing I would say, is just learning that, you know, my purpose in life is to really just manifest compassion, and I need to start with myself.
100%.
So where, you know, that's where my heart is. And that's what I want to share with everyone. So,
yes. Oh my gosh. I love that. And it really is true. It's like, you cannot really offer compassion to others in a meaningful way until it's like, you have to be your own first recipient of it.
Yeah.
And really learn how to have compassion for yourself, even when you do all the things you know you shouldn't do, or you wish you didn't do, or that you hate that you do. And then you can offer it to others so much more. Oh my gosh. Jeez, we just dropped the mic right there. That's so good. I totally love it. Oh my gosh. So, okay. So just because our time's coming to an end here. Yeah. So you are now a coach yourself. Are you, are you coaching patients in Hong Kong? Like, tell me exactly, what are you doing?
So I have two different populations that I coach. One is women doctors in the US. So this is like just through my health and wellness coaching program that I did through University of Arizona. Like, I just threw out, you know, like these emails to people that I knew from, you know, residency, fellowship, you know, whatever. And basically, you know, I was coaching doctors through, you know, the early phases of the pandemic in New York and New Jersey. You know, there was like family medicine doctors going, you know, I don't know how to manage event. And, you know, like, it's like, hey, but, you know, it's all good. Better than a radiologist, probably. Don't know.
right.
Yeah. And so I have that kind of population. And like I said, you know, I just feel like women physicians are, you know, my tribe. You know, I honestly feel like by doing this work that we will transform the future of medicine. So
I agree.
That is the goal, right?
Let's hope. So, yep.
So that is kind of like one, you know, special interest area. And then like here in Hong Kong, what I've done is actually this last month in the process of switching over my primary care practice into a coaching practice.
That's so cool.
I sent out like 500 emails and was like, hey, I'm actually going to switch and do health and wellness coaching now. If you want to stay my patient in primary care, then you're welcome to sign up for this package. This is how it looks. I'm happy to do a free trial with you. And so I'm coaching now some of my primary care patients. And that's super fun because they have never had the model before.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So you get to have that experience of like blowing people's minds of just like, what? My thoughts hurt my feelings. What?
Yeah. And so that focus there is really, so we call them expat women. So expats are like people who live away from the US, right? Mm-hmm. So it's expat women who are 50 and up. And what I'm going to help them do is to create a roadmap for the best half of their life. So
I love it. Oh my gosh, that's so good. So if anybody wants to check you out, like find out more information, where can they go?
So I have a website. So it's integrityhealing.info. So integrityhealing, all one word, smushed together, .info.
Awesome. They can find out everything. That's so great. Oh my gosh. It's so fun. I love to talk about you all the time too. I'm like, well, you know, my client in Hong Kong, you know, so fun.
I feel so embarrassed that I missed that one message from you that went to my junk mailbox about the drawings, about the tea doodles.
We haven't even talked about that. You do like the most adorable, like I'm just going to say this publicly on this podcast, like secretly, I really was like, wait, could we like commission her to draw more of these things? In fact, actually, would you let us use maybe one of your drawings for the image for this podcast?
Absolutely. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yes. We'll sort it out on the back end. We'll figure out like which one we should do. But like, you just like happened to share. Well, you should talk a little more. Like, you feel like sometimes if you draw it, you're able to kind of see the pattern better.
So I'm an artist, and so I tend to see things in images. And so when I'm journaling, what will often happen is that an image will pop into my head and then I'll draw it. And that actually, you know, helps me, you know, kind of along my journaling process. And what I've done is that I call them tea doodles, thought doodles, kind of like thought downloads.
Yeah.
And what I've done is I've like, you know, the ones that I like the best, like I've made them kind of nicer, I've colored them in, you know, and I sent them to their team just as a thank you for like all the amazing work that your team does.
Oh my gosh. And, we seriously, we're all dying. We're like, what? We love her even more now. These are so great. It's so cool. I think my initial way of thinking is like, I'm not particularly artistic. Like, that's not something that comes naturally to me, but I have actually, I don't know where, read or saw or something that this is something that actually can be developed. Like, a lot of people think they're not artistic, but if you want to like learn how to draw, this is actually a skill that you can develop. For sure. So now I just tell myself, this is like an undeveloped skill that I have. It's undeveloped though. No, but that is just not anything that I have in my, you know, wheelhouse of capabilities right now. So I just find that so amazing. And it just like, it makes so much sense. Maybe because, you know, I'm a pretty visual person too. And so I often have like kind of, you know, images in my mind. And so you just are able to put them out actually onto paper, which is so fun.
You
that's
can
so
too.
Great. Right. That's someday in my free time.
That's one of the things that I teach in my kind of healthy aging is that mindful creativity is actually a form of meditation. So like, it's hard sometimes for people just to sit there and like, you know, whatever, but actually if you're focused on doing an activity, and it could be like creating a mandala, it could be like, you know, making a collage or whatever, like that actually is a way to like, you know, just train your brain to like focus on this one project that's pretty simple. You have to make some very simple decisions and, you know, just go with it.
And just do it. You know, I agree. Like, I mean, you know, I'm back in early medical school, I did run a marathon. My body was an absolute trashed mess through the whole thing. So lest you think like, oh my God, she ran a marathon. Like it almost killed me. But I do have to say that it was like that first year of medical school, I actually started training right before I went through like a really intense breakup with my boyfriend at the time. And like all of that running was actually like bomb for my soul because I really could just like go into a meditative state. Like the number of times I fell, I can't even tell you because I would be so not even inhabiting my body and then I trip on something, just go flying. So I always remember that, like it would take, you know, maybe a couple miles. Like once you start running and like, that many miles, it's like, it takes a couple miles to get like kind of comfortable into that zone. And then it's just like, you could just feel like you could go forever. It's such an incredible experience. So, you know, one thing I've recently, I mean, now we're like totally just chatting and everyone gets so sad, which is fun, but something I've been experimenting with is sound meditation. So actually creating sound and having that be the meditation. And I really like that. Cause like you said, it's something to do. And it's like, it's just, it's different than, just, you know, sit there in the quiet.
Right.
And like, try not to think anything, which of course doesn't work. Our brains are like, oh yeah, here's rapid fire, all of the thoughts. I think it's fun to try new things.
The guru at the University of Arizona program is Dr. Andy Weil. And what I love about the way he teaches meditation is that, you know, we're actually all meditating all the time. We just don't think of it that way. So when you brush your teeth, like, you know, it's going to take a minute or two, right? And that's a meditation. When you wash the dishes, you know, or load the dishwasher or unload the dishwasher, right? That is actually kind of a ritualistic thing where you can kind of just not even think about, you know, what you're doing, right? Don't have to pay attention. That is a meditation, right? Yes. And so he encourages us, and I think you do too, is to not be always like have to be listening to something or always have to be, you know, distracted. You know, just allow yourself to be doing that task for the minute or two or whatever it takes. Because that's
the same thing with the eating for you, right? Mm-hmm. Like being willing to be with yourself long enough to do whatever that task is. And that's what so many of us, you know, we're like, no, but being with myself without other outside input is really uncomfortable. And that's what we have to learn how to change, right?
It's being with ourselves. And I want to say, like, just kind of enjoying the simple pleasure of, you know, brushing, cleaning your teeth or, you know, whatever it is, or having clean dishes. Like, there is a pleasure to be had there that we're kind of like, oh, I'm so over that. Right.
Well, you know, I did that podcast on like all those, like those pleasures that are part of our life. Like you just have, they're there if you just pay attention. And it really can be like, look at this, all the dishes are put away, the dishwasher is empty, or like the breakfast dishes are in there or whatever. And it's just like, ah, like there's something calming about that and taking note of it rather than jumping right to the next thing or constantly being, you know, bombarded with new information. And of course, as I'm telling people, like, don't listen to podcasts as they're probably listening to this podcast right now. There's a balance that must be achieved. That's what we're saying.
We all choose that for ourselves.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for coming on sharing your story. It's just so inspiring. And you're just amazing. So thank you so much.
Super fun. Oh, thank you.
Did you know that you can find a lot more help from me on my website? Go to KatrinaUbelMD.com and click on free resources.